So these are the people who have done the work for this project. Mention their names as I go through the talk. So I want to tell you today about some work that we've been doing over the last several years about molecular motors, synthetic motors that move by phoretic mechanisms. And
most of you are
experts in this anyway, so.
But not all.
But not all, but I'll try to be brief, but
I won't give
a lot of details. This is an example of a Janus motor where half of the almost spherical particle is catalytic in the sense that it catalyzes the reaction A to B, and the other half, the red half, is non-reactive. I've drawn this particular one because this is actually the form of the Janus particle that we simulate. It's a Janus particle made from a collection of fused spheres, basically. And
a portion of the spheres
are catalytic and the remainder aren't. So as a result of the asymmetry in the catalysis on this object, you can see that you'll generate a concentration gradient of the B and correspondingly the A particles across the particle. And these species A and B interact differently with the particle. So their interaction potentials that are described by these functions W. And as a result of that, there's an imbalanced force across the particle. The boundary zone that I've sketched here actually denotes the fact that these forces are short-ranged, and so in fact the forces are zero beyond this outer sphere. And the momentum of the entire system is conserved, and so the forces that are generated here are compensated for through momentum conservation by flows in the surrounding solvent. And so in a continuum picture, you have to look at basically the reaction diffusion equation that gives rise to the concentration gradient, and then look at the solution typically for the Stokes equation in the surrounding fluid, and from that you can compute the particle velocity. And lambda C and lambda N. So the C stands for the catalytic particles and the N for the non-catalytic particles. And
how lambda S enters the result?
S is either C or N. Yeah, so yeah.
If they are completely identical, then it is zero and there is no velocity.
That's correct.
But if they have different difficulties?
That's something that I have not considered. No, so I've assumed similar diffusion coefficients for this case.
What is lambda now?
Okay, so lambda is defined by this equation.
Yeah.
So it represents lambda has the units of length, and it's basically describes the imbalance of the forces, in this case the potentials, across this system. Actually, you'll see an expression for this a little bit later that might be more clear. So coming back to your point about the diffusion coefficients, that actually relates to the computation of the velocity. But for the force on the particle, as long as the even if the diffusion coefficients are the same, okay. So if the potentials are the same, there's no force on the particle. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Okay, so basically this is the general structure of the form of the velocity for this case.
You see, it depends on the temperature, the viscosity, the characteristic size of the particles,
this these intermolecular potentials, and this is a coefficient that you have to get from the solution to the reaction diffusion equation with the appropriate boundary conditions.
So you emphasize
that the potentials are equal when so this goes out. This is a completely energetic point of view. Yes. So in principle, these are really the potentials of mean force, and so the entropic contributions would appear there.
It's not equilibrium, so diffusion coefficients matter. I just would like to say that I don't completely agree with your statement that the diffusion coefficients are the same, are different, but the potential potential of the same, so the force will be zero. It's not true. To my point, it's not true.
So I guess what I'm saying is the following, that, let me think about this, because I should be very careful. We'll be able to answer your question in a few minutes when I write down the formula. Because basically, a lot of stuff goes into this particular expression. But from a molecular point of view, it's very easy to write down an exact molecular expression for the force on the particle. And so, regardless of questions concerning what factors go into computing the velocity, the expression for the force is very, very simple, but it involves the microscopic density field of the system. And if you want the average force on the particle, then it requires the non-equilibrium average of that force. And that's where the tricky business comes in, because the non-equilibrium average of the force does in fact contain information about the diffusion and all other factors that come into play. It's encoded in there. So yes, so one has to be careful, and so about that. When I say this is zero, I'm actually making an assumption about the way one treats the integral that involves that non-equilibrium average. So I should be cautious about that. Okay.
Yeah. And here you also mean that this conversion of A to B happens with probability 1 when A touches the part.
You can do that. You can choose that.
Otherwise, it doesn't show up.
It actually is embedded in this expression right here, because if the probability is not 1, then it changes the corresponding reaction rates for that system. And even if it's 1, because of the particular nature of this, the reaction could be either diffusion controlled, reaction controlled, or some mixture of the two. And even with probability 1, you're not guaranteed that you have, say, reaction control for this.
Since this picture is so basic, I understand that. What is your model assumption concerning the momentum transfer from the fuel to the particle and to the product?
Okay, so there are two aspects to the... I can give you two answers to that question. They'll actually become clear in the next slide. So most of what I will be doing is presenting the results of simulations of this particular dynamics. In that dynamics, the dynamics conserves mass momentum and energy for all of the events that go on in this system. So all of the issues concerning momentum conservation and how that's transmitted to the fluid is automatically accounted for in the dynamics. In this particular formulation, it's the standard one where one treats the dynamics inside the boundary layer and then couples it to the surrounding fluid by solving the Stokes equation with the appropriate slip condition on the outer boundary here. The enthalpy of the chemical reaction?
Enthalpy.
Enthalpy, yes. So that is also taken into account in the precise specification of the collision step.
And the masses of fuel and collide, are they the same or different?
That's up to you. If you want to make them different, then you have to modify the mass of the catalytic particles to account for mass conservation. Otherwise, you can construct the dynamics to account for that situation.
If I have a picture of, say, a realistic experimental setup, then probably these molecules, because I have interdependence of freedom, rotation.
Yes.
Oscillations.
Yes.
This model is a simplified version.
Yes. Structureless particles. Yes. That's right. So in what I'll describe in a few moments, I'll assign an internal degree of freedom in a notional sense that allows you to control the exothermicity of the reaction, the enthalpy that you're talking about. Actually, in all of these models, you can put in what you want. If you wanted to make this more complicated, you could, but you'd have to ask the question, is it really worth it for what you want to get out of it? And
so temperature is then constant throughout?
So most of the time I'll be talking about thermoneutral reactions, but if the reaction is endothermic or exothermic, then you also generate a temperature profile. In fact, I'll talk about that in a minute. Okay, so that's just a brief overview of a very brief of, and very sketchy. I could have given a long one if you like, but yeah. Okay, so I said I was going to talk, mainly present the results of simulations, and I want to say a few words about those, particularly with regard to the chemical reactions. So, here's a particle. It doesn't have to be a Janus particle. So the way the calculations are done is so you have a collection of particles in the system, and let's say the reactive species A and B. If you have a reaction A goes to B, which is here, say, then whenever a particle collides with the catalytic portion of the Janus particle or whatever other particle you have, the catalytic site, then it converts to B, and typically this is done with a certain probability. I can make the probability one or not, but the important thing is that the particles have to get there, so there's a diffusion component to the rate and the probability of a reaction, basically the collision frequency that gives rise to the reactive event. And sometimes you can attach to these A and B particles internal state labels so that when A goes to B, there's an energy deficit involved. And that energy you have to put someplace, and I'll tell you where we put it later. And alternatively, you can consider somewhat more complicated collisions where, again, an A particle hits the catalytic site and it's converted into 2B. And now, of course, you have mass conservation for this, so these have half the mass. In all of these reactive collisions, they're done in such a way that mass, momentum, and energy are conserved. So the appropriate conservation laws are satisfied for the system. The collisions in the environment are done by multiparticle collision dynamics, where you divide the system into cells. You look at the to every cell you assign a rotation operator from some set of rotation operators. You consider the difference between the velocity of particle I in that cell and the center of mass velocity in the cell. You rotate it, add back the center of mass velocity, and that gives you the post-collision velocity. So it's an artificial dynamics, but it again conserves mass, momentum, and energy in the cell. Now, what I wanted to primarily focus on in this slide is the fact that these self-propulsion properties are a phenomenon for a non-equilibrium system. In equilibrium, there's no net propulsion for the system. So somehow or another, you have to maintain the system in a non-equilibrium state. And you can do that in two ways, actually in several ways. One way is to feed in the fuel from the boundaries of the system and remove the products from the system as well, and that will maintain the system in a non-equilibrium state. Another way of doing it is to actually have chemical far from equilibrium reactions in the environment which remove product and regenerate fuel. And so we do that by combining this velocity changing collision with bulk chemical reactions. And the formulas are here, but it's really not important to look at the details. But basically, every time we perform one of these velocity changing collisions, we look at the contents of a cell. And we look at the number of particles of different species in the cell. And then we carry out a chemical to determine the expressions for rho alpha. And they don't, their velocity, average velocity is zero, and they just undergo Brownian motion.